to James, Reel 15. Right, Mr. James, we're still in Norfolk. Any other memories of that time? You said the conditions
were... Well, I remember at Worstead anyway. It rained and rained incessantly for weeks and weeks. We thought it would never stop. We were all wet through. Day after day we were wishing for the sun. Didn't come. We were walking about with these ground sheets on. And the ground sheet was something you slept on as well, of course, you know. I mean, your ground sheet was to be slept on in the tent, and also to be used as a sort of a temporary cape in foul weather. We were all wearing our ground sheets all day long. And it was really a terrible place. The mud got worse by the hour. And there were duck boards everywhere. And not an exaggeration to say, but the mud was 18 inches, 2 feet deep in places, all over the place. It was a morass. It was terrible. And I'm floating down a bit away from there.
You can't remember any particular exercises from that time?
No, yeah. I can't. I think the Worcester camp was an established camp in East Anglia for a purpose, for the defence of East Anglia, obviously looking at it, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, but East Anglia was absolutely chock-a-block with troops of every description. And it was an army camp that most battalions passed through. I heard other people saying, oh, I was there once, you know. It was something that had to be somebody, everybody's experience.
Can you remember any friction with other units or any contact or any problems at that time?
No, we had no. We were well disciplined. We were well, you know, we were a happy lot, really. We had a good reputation. Wherever we went, everybody knew that we were on our best behaviour. Mm-hmm. And all the population loved us wherever we went. We were proud of our reputation. We were told that people will know that we are Derriman Infantry and they don't want any adverse reports from us. And they didn't get any either. Mm-hmm. It's reflected on the discipline of the town. Mm-hmm. It had a good name.
Yeah. Now, when did you move from HQ Company to D Company? And then we'll talk about
it. Yes, it was at Y.
So that's a little bit further on, so we'll get to that. So this is after, we've got a couple of months to get through.
That's right.
So from Norfolk, you moved where? And
we moved from Worcester Camp down to Shorncliffe, down to Hellfire Corner.
And when was that?
And that was, I would think, about August or something like that. Let me see, 8:41 we were to Worcester Camp, that was August. And so we must have moved down to Shorncliffe about the end of August, or the end of 1941. Mm-hmm. I'm just thinking, Shorncliffe Barracks is where we went to, and we were in Shorncliffe for a few weeks back in barracks, and we had to sort of smarten up. There is a place where we really had to smarten up. It was an order. Back in barracks, we had to be smart, and so did we again. And everything had to be gleaming. We had to polish the coal buckets, and, you know, and the floors were sort of thumped with these bumpers, you know, and polished. And we had the special brigadier as well in Shorncliffe.
That's the 139 Brigade.
139 Brigade. Mm-hmm. Brigadier Chichester Constable. Dapper little man, very smart little chap, with a bristling moustache. And beady eyes, and I think we had at Shorncliffe an inspection by him. It's very vague, but we had one of the members I had at Shorncliffe was, of course, everywhere, the Bank Square again, and companies were doing drill, and there was a CO's parade first of all, and there was a Brigadier's parade. Well, the CO's parade was the forerunner. The Brigadier's Parade. I was a pupil. Yeah, those were the days when Sergeant Sird was there then, yes, at a place, the chapel of Sergeant Major Savino. But we also had a sergeant who had been in action with the BEF suddenly come upon us, and he was a big chap. He was about 6'2" and brawny. His name was Sergeant Horseman. Where he came from, I don't know, but he had the AMM up. Well, we all sort of looked at him, and My design amendment bill. It's a very paltry, we know, one of us. Anyway, there's parade for the commanding officer before the brigadier's parade, and he's on the march, and the RSM is in charge, and it is still Pickering, because Thompson took over at Troy. Still Pickering, and suddenly, a word of command said, his horseman, and he wasn't on parade. And the whole bloody lot turned about. Out, you know, he turned out to be a nutty case. And there was ructions about it. He was standing at the side somewhere, and he chatted about turn. And the whole turned about turn there. Of course, he was arrested. And he was, I think he was on a charge, and he was called Marshall. And he was found that he was a psycho case. Mm. That's one memory of Shortcliffe, with horsemen shouting his unauthorised command.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember anything else about Chichester Constable?
I remember him coming around and inspecting his hall at Shortcliffe, and I remember particularly him looking at me, and I was there, and he asked me how old I was, and I sensed that he was probably weighing up my youth. I can't remember much about it.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, at Shorncliffe, what would your duties be there? What was the general duties of the battalion?
It was all bull. It was all bull. Believe the second part and bull out, but it was bull. And
why was that? What was it? Yeah, but why do you think?
In barracks, it was a time when we were moved from the morass of Worcester camp down to this barracks in the front line, you know, Folkestone. You were shelled every day. A shell came through the gym and injured a couple of blokes, and I can't remember whether he died or not, but a shell came through the gym from Calais. And I couldn't believe it. And that was, so the big guns, the very big guns, big berthers at Calais, were trained on Shorncliffe and Folkestone and Dover, and the return guns were at Dover Castle, firing back from the heights of Dover. Mm-hmm. And that happened then, and all through the war, I understand. Mm-hmm. Big howitzer. Firing enormous shells 20 odd miles across the channel. Mm. But I remember that particular day, it wasn't a safe place. But one came through the gym in Shorncliffe, and a lot of them, of course, landed in Dover. And there were quite a lot of cash, there was nobody knew anything about. But it's called Hellfire Corner.
What about air raids and so on? You'd have encountered these for the first time.
Well, it was all blackout time. I can't remember particularly any specific air raids down at Shorncliffe and folks at that time. What I do remember was that from Shorncliffe suddenly we were providing guards, sentry guards, to guard Folkestone Harbour. And also another detachment of guards, we travelled to Folkestone. Garden Folkestone Harbour, travelled to Dover, which is the next place, about 2 or 3 miles beyond. Mm-hmm. And eventually that was what we were doing down there after a little period of war, guarding Folkestone Harbour and Dover. Mm-hmm. Then, for some unknown reason, thank God, we were taken out of the barracks. And the civilian population of Folkestone, of course, were evacuated, largely. Mm-hmm. And I remember the hill going down called Remembrance Way, going down from the heights of Dover, or Folkestone, down to Docks. Remembrance Way is where all the chaps in the First World War walked down to go to the battlefield in France, called Remembrance Way. I remember that very well. At the top of that, there was an empty hotel called Wampach, W-A-M-P-A-C-H, Wampach Hotel. And other hotels as well in Folkestone were deserted and empty, all the carpets taken up, all the furniture, etc. And so we moved down to Shortland Barracks and we moved to the hotels. Well, I was in the Runpack Hotel, which was just not very far from Remembrance Way, from the Lees, this is the high cliffs at sea. And in the Runpack Hotel, I remember particularly, God, it felt to be something. Singapore fell. And PSN Glamour was full of woe in the Sergeant's Mess. And it was the bad news hit us all. The fall of Singapore. Now that was the time we were in the went back. So that was the end of 1941.
And at this time you were still going out on exercises, there were still kind of schemes of various kinds, were there?
Well, the battalion was involved in exercises like that, but no, I was a coup bloke, and I can't remember very much happening in Folkestone regarding exercises apart from the guards. We provided the guards with food and supper, and the battalion was out from the barracks. And we had a certain, something happened down at Dimchurch and Romney Marshes and places like that. But I didn't know what the town was doing during the day. Mm-hmm. But suddenly we moved to Rye from there. And apart from all the dances, the Eastcape Hall in Folkestone and the beer we drank in the Wampack.
Could you talk a little bit about that, just about how you, your recreation at that time?
Well, the recreation was, it was a deserted town, apart from the soldiers, and the pumps were there for the soldiers and the sailors. Down Remembrance Way, down to the docks, and opposite the docks there were the pumps, and they're still there this very day, because I read the books in last year, and it all came back to me. And the pumps were there for the military. And the town was deserted, and the Lees of the cliffs, of course, the frontage of Folkestone, with a drop down to the sands of the beach, barbed wire and mines everywhere down there. You know, it was the front line. And but above the barbed wire, only a matter of a few yards, the Leeslip Hall was a big dance hall right next to the sea. Mm-hmm. But all the soldiers and the Air Force men especially, and the ATS girls and the Wrens and the WAFs and all those, every night went to the Eastgate Hall to dance it. Every night without fail. Every night. All the old-fashioned dancing, you know, foxtrots and waltzes. They say, the sweetest thing, baby. Da 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 da.
Would that be all ranks? That would be
all ranks. Yeah. And if you wanted to drown your sorrows, you know, a few pints in the pubs that were open, go to the Leeslip Hall and have a dance, and then you would dance every night. Mm. And that was the frontline town, and this enormous Leeslip Hall was packed with ex-servicemen and women.
Did you feel? I mean, you know, you're a young single fella at this time. Did you feel at a disadvantage as a man in the army with a big ammunition belt and no necktie and so on, compared with maybe the Air Force men?
Well, absolutely. The Air Force chaps were walking about, you know, like civvies, really. And they thought that they were superior to you as well. Oh, my God, yes. The Air Force blokes were the Brooklyn boys, as we called them. And they had collars and ties. You know, later on, we did, they what they did, they altered the battle dress later on, and made the rough, and made the rough clasp fitting in the front disappear, and we had them funeres sewn on by regimental tailors, giving us, I suppose, really speaking, because of the RAF uniform, something similar. They transferred the battle dress from a close neck thing
But this was much later in the war, wasn't it?
Much later in the
war. So at this stage, even on a night off, you would still have to wear your ammunition boots. Would
absolutely
that be true?
Mm-hmm. What I did when I went home on leave, I had an old pair of shoes that I really loved. They were supple with straps and a buckle, and they were easy to take and quick to take on and off. And I took them back for such things as dances. And I used to wear them, and if I'd been out for a drink, I'd have ammunition boots on. I was sometimes on the risk of all dancing with ammunition boots on. But if I knew I'd be at the risk of all tomorrow night, I would put those things on. And some of us, many of us, had a spare pair of shoes, which we could sort of put on to go to the dance.
Would you get into trouble if that was discovered?
No, not at night time. It was winter. And it was front line. If you were, when the day was over and you were finished for the day, you could go out on the bear and you could you had your freedom.
Mm-hmm. Are there any incidents from that time that spring to mind? Any amusing incidents in your nights out with ferries?
Not really. I can't think of anything that was amusing at Folkestone. I've had a few times in Latin. Sergeant Latin.
As the future CSM.
Yeah. Yeah.
And what kind of man was he?
He was a very good company.
In what way?
Yeah, he was very good company. And I liked him a lot.
In what way was he good company?
Humorous. I liked his character. Devil may care. He was a sod for the women. And he was... Oh my God, yes, whenever we met, Madeline was one of the boys he was.
Was there a lot of drinking at this time then? I mean, was that the reputation?
In Folkestone, there was nothing else to do. Nothing else to do. Even the one-pack hotel had our own bar, where you could go in there and you could drink yourself, you know, silly if you wanted to at night time. There was beer in the pub. We had something by the Shawcliffe, which is now a couple of miles away. We were in Folkestone in this hotel business. We were scattered again and spread out, you know. And I was in the hotel one pack, funny name. I remember it was really being there in the front line town, manning the defences, but it was an easy going, beery time before moving on to wine.
So that was your next move, and when do you think that was?
That's right. That was about in March, I would think, February or March, nearly 42, as far as I can remember. And there was, again, of course, I mean, in the one pack, I had a massive duty, but they were noting all the nail holes in the walls and windows and all that sort of thing, and bathroom charges, you know, to avoid paying that. And the same thing in Rye. And we moved to Rye. And it was a fascinating place. And the battalion was very popular in Rye. We were there. I was there before being on the Winchelsea. They decided to have two companies in Winchelsea on detachment. But I was in Rye for a little while.
So when were you transferred to D Company?
In Rye. It was in Rye. Yeah. It was D Company. It was in Rye.
And how did that come around?
I suddenly found that Tubby Baker had told Newman that he thought there was a vacancy for a CQMS in Rye, in Winchelsea. D Company was bereft of a CQMS, and CSM Wales was a CSM with C Company, and then he was promoted Sergeant Major. Colour Sergeant Gaines came from Iceland at this time to the battalion and took over C Company. And there were changes like that generally. Mm-hmm. And I was told by Bert Newman that Tubby Baker was going to take over headquarters company. But he said, "Don't worry, lad. I'm giving you D Company in Winchelsea. There's not so much work in D Company. The G1098 list is much less." So he said, "You've done very well." And he said, "You're not being moved on because of anything like that. It's just that there are vacancies have arisen, and you were wanted in a rifle company, in D company, and Tubby Baker is going to take over and call the company. So I gave him the old codside look, and I said, yeah, I know all about that. I said, you've been trying to pitch my job for a long time, quartermaster. I said, but I said, you were the boss. I said, anyway, I've got D company. He said, yes, go to D company and take over straight away. Ginger Argent was a CQMS in D company, and he went back to Bransfield. He was a big boozer, Ginger Argent, one of the characters, with Crow. And Crow was a CQMS of B company, and he went back to the depot. Mm. And there was a general move around. So Ginger, we lost Ginger Argent, and we lost Crow, and they were a couple of great characters, and I liked them very much, because, you know, I knew them.
In what way were they characters, though? Because they were boozers?
Oh, they were boozers. Especially Crow, full of humour, full of jokes, and he was getting on. And they were both in their 40s, and I suppose, really speaking, he was letting himself go, or Crow. He was very friendly, and he'd sing a song in the pub, but anyway, I remember Ginger Argent, particularly, and Crow, and we were together. They came from Brunsburg and they went back. Mm-hmm. And Rose Vegas's arose. And that was one of the causes for movements. And Archimedes came from Iceland, joined the battalion, and was given C Company, and I was given D Company. Mm-hmm. And we were both over the Vincency together like that as new CPSs.
Mm-hmm. And as a rifle company colour sergeant, how was that different from...
Much easier. The GK98 was quarter the thickness. Only thing was that I had to take over the bikes, the bicycles that were in Winchelsea. And we had to have a cyclist platoon.
When did you get the cyclist platoon?
The bikes were already there, and I had to go and take them over. And appoint somebody to maintain them, Sergeant Emerson was in charge of the bicycle platoon.
And he's featured on the Imperial War Museum photographs.
Yes, that's right. And I remember particularly that it was I had them on charge. And my extra duties was to make sure that they were always in running order, Well, of course, I said, anybody in the company didn't know anything about bikes. And they all like bikes. And say, oh yes, this bike, yes, you can replace brake blocks. Yes, you can adjust sprockets, and you can mend chains and all that sort of thing, you know, and oil them up. And so my responsibilities were that they had to be in usable order, because they were there for a purpose. They had to make the troops be in Winchelsea, and in Winchelsea, halfway between Winchelsea and Hastings, on the left-hand side, there was a place called Gessling and Fairlight. They were the lanes going down to the sea. And there was a lane, a low road, which is very vulnerable from the, you know, from France. And the sea, you wouldn't think it was there. It was up an embankment, about 30 or 40 feet. And you go up this embankment, they got the sea, with a shingle beach going down the gutter quite a long way, but there was the sea, there was this high embankment, and there was the lane below, Gessling, Fairlight, and Winchelsea.
Mm-hmm.
And the troops had to be quick on their bikes to get down there quick, if there was an invasion.
And you only had the bikes at Winchelsea, and it was only one platoon of D Company.
That was where they were, and they were handed over to the next people coming in. They were Winchelsea bikes.
Mm-hmm.
They were there for the purpose. They were there for to get the troops down to the sea road, the lower road, quickly.
Mm-hmm. So what was the accommodation in Winchelsea, if you could just describe that?
Oh, excellent, really. Winchelsea is a dreamy little town. It was sacked by the French in the 13th century or something, and the church was set on fire all those centuries ago. Beautiful town on the top of the hill, with stone gateways into the little town, built specially so that it was a walled, not a moat. And these stone gateways were at the entrance to the town all over the place. I used to call it a village, but apparently it's an insult to call it a village. It's no bigger than a village, but people like to call it a town. It was all wonderful properties. The rich people used to live there. They vacated their properties. They had French names. All sorts of wonderful names, these houses, and they were empty. And the troops occupied, two companies of troops occupied the town, and were in charge of these lovely houses.
So that was C&D Company?
C&D Company.
Where were the other companies and headquarters?
In Rye. Mm-hmm. And one or two, I understand, was in the villages out of Rye, northwards. Northwestwards. Looking at the map, I would sort of be reminded, but there were one or two villages outside of Rye. But anyway, our role was, of course, the defence of Rye Emergency.
Mm-hmm. And that was C&D Companies. Did you have like a sergeant's mess, or did you have to go to Rye for the
sergeant? No, we had a nice little sergeant's mess in Winchelsea. There was the church. The company officers were on the main road, just up the hill from my main road, and then came to the church, and there was an opening, so that's where the churchyard was, and right in front of the church was a group of delightful little houses and gardens, and we commandeered a house that was empty anyway, facing the church, and that was the sergeant's mess and sleeping quarters. We had the downstairs, the mess, and we had our own cooks, and for the mess, which gave us good food, and we had the upstairs, not the mess, where we slept. I had an enormous bedroom up there. It was a big bedroom, all empty, with bare boards and everything. Just one bed in it. But that was where I slept, up top of the stairs, above the mess, there. And one night, I was in bed. Christ, I heard footsteps, and somebody opened my door. Captain Whelan, Company Commander. Colours armed. You have left the bloody office light on. He said, can you come and put it out? And that was about 1 a.m. when he said, I left the bloody office light on. I must have left it on from the end of the day. Mm-hmm. But Joe was still sleeping, is it?
And did the officers, C&D Company officers, did they have their own mess in
Winchelsea? They had their own mess in Winchelsea. I didn't know where they were. I mean, I got a good idea where they were, but I never visited them or anything like that. Mm-hmm. But I know that they were there.
What about the ordinary troops and the rifle companies? What was
their service? Well, they had their big dining hall as well, you know. And as I said, they messed together. C&D Company messed together in Winchelsea. And I used to go daily, should go daily, but it was by arrangement. The colour sergeant said, well, I'll go one day, you go the next, and the same as both going. And then all the officers were there anyway, both companies, and all the sergeants were there, both guys would be there, to look at the welfare of their own companies. So it was every other day, really, for the secret messes.
And that was you and?
And secret mess games.
Of C Company.
That's right, C Company, that's right. Father Pearson is sergeant major, and George Broadhead was mine. And then one day, in Winchelsea, an ATS girl came into my office. And she said, I'm with the General Montgomery, and we've arrived in the village, and we want rations for 8 every day.